From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. We know so much more about how the brain works and how to treat it than even a decade ago. Clinical advances in neurology, psychiatry, sleep medicine, rehabilitation medicine, and other cerebral mysteries drive a new show from GPB.
This is a show exploring the mysteries and the science of the amazing human brain. What does it mean to be the best at something? For one man from South Georgia, the path to success was punishing. And in the process, he lost who he was.
Your Fantastic Mind premieres tonight at 8, highlighting stories from patients and researchers who study the complex and fascinating human brain. Jay Watson is the show's executive producer, writer, and host, and joins me now in the studio. Jay, so great to see you.
Virginia, wonderful to be here.
Good Congratulations, morning. By the way.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You are a veteran Atlanta journalist. So what got you interested in all things brain related?
So I'm very lucky that this job was created for me at Emory Brain Health to go and be their video storyteller. And it was definitely a unique experience to leave network affiliated news and to go into a place where I'm the odd man out. I'm in a world of scientists and research physicians, and I'm kind of this autonomous little bubble roving about looking for stories. So we started putting the stories out there, and the response was good. And now we're sitting here this morning, and that's because of a lunch I had about a year ago with Taya Ryan, the president and CEO of Georgia Public Broadcasting, who we were introduced by a mutual friend, and over the course of lunch, basically decided to do this show.
Well, the show is produced in partnership with Emory's Brain Health Center, which deals with everything from psychiatry to epilepsy to sleep disorders. Mm-hmm. What kind of stories are you finding at the health center that hadn't been explored?
I think that probably some of these stories may have been told before, but in a surface way. So now that I'm there, we get to dig really deep on them. For example, one of the stories in our premiere tonight is an NFL player who's had over 20 concussions and has never publicly shared his incredible struggles he's going through. And he decided to go public with us. So we were able to be with him at his sessions because he's trying a unique type of cognitive therapy that is showing that parts of the brain that are not damaged can pick up the slack for the parts that are. And so we are able to I loved all my years in TV news, but one thing I have right now that I didn't have before is time. Mm. We have followed some of these people that are going to be featured in the show for almost 2 years now. So we're able to show the genesis of something from beginning to end, to be able to follow the trajectory of the disease no matter what direction it goes in.
Let's hear a little bit. This is from former NFL player Nate Lewis from the first episode.
How did they treat you for a concussion when you got one?
Ice. On top of my head or on my neck.
In the NFL.
What?
And besides ice?
That's it. That was it. That's the only treatment I got.
Wow. So ice. Right. What does this reveal? You said that there are parts of the brains that can be rehabilitated. What did you learn?
So neuropsychologist Dr. Tony Stringer has been working with patients for decades using this therapy, this cognitive rehab that he developed. And at first he used it with people who were involved in car accidents, who suffered traumatic brain injuries. And this therapy or rehab helped them regain function. And basically, people started seeking him out, athletes, when they saw what he was doing. And he is, of course, an expert in the field of concussion, which he will tell you that what we know about concussion is continuously evolving. And that in cases of football players, where we hear in death that people have been diagnosed with CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, that's not something that can be diagnosed while they're living. He's also doing a lot of research using people who have mild cognitive impairment, which is often a precursor to Alzheimer's disease. And they are seeing in those people whose brains stop lighting up in critical areas that once they do this type of cognitive rehab, the areas of other different areas of the brain start to light up, areas connected to strategy. And so it's a way to work around a problem that's not going to go away.
When you're looking at this, brain research, of course, deals with functions along with how our thoughts and how our feelings form. What kind of ethical questions come up when you are exploring stories about the brain?
I think a lot. I think there's a huge intersection between science and how it intersects with our social world we're living in. And a lot of the stories that we have done, they go to the very essence of what it means to be human. And so when it comes to some of the stories that we're exploring in psychiatry, what it's told me is that there's a tremendous amount that we don't know. We're already looking ahead and planning to season two, and I'm going to do an entire episode on the opioid crisis. Mm-hmm. And I was having a conversation with the heads of the Psychoanalytic Institute who were explaining to me one of the roots they feel of the opioid crisis is a struggle to connect. And by the struggle to connect, people who are in their late teens to early 20s tend to be the highest number of abusers or addicts, and that this generation has been raised on their smartphones, mm-hmm. and that this struggle to connect is replaced by an opioid because it mimics a feeling of connection and love. And so I think there's a constant intersection between the neuroethics and what we're finding out socially and how it impacts every facet of our lives.
But that's something we're going to be talking about later in the show, the nature of opioid addiction or how it affects certain occupations. But you looked in another episode, mm-hmm. video game addiction, and hear from teenagers. So what does playing video games do to people's brains, especially if they're younger teens?
Well, you know what I have to confess right here is I'm one of those parents. I have a 13-year-old son who would die of malnutrition in the basement if we didn't pull him out and set limits. So the fascinating thing that they have learned, the reason that gaming disorder was added as a mental health disorder last year is because what they are finding is that when these kids play, and let's say they get to the next level, they get a dopamine reward. And so they want to keep playing because it feels good. And then the other part of that is, like most addictions, they have to play longer in order to get that same dopamine delivery. And in a game like Fortnite, which has really changed the playing field for games, because not only is it not a DVD that you put in, it's digital only, like most games today. It's updated frequently, which we all know that the brain loves novelty. So there's constant novelty, constant new characters, constant new weaponry, constant new landscapes. So the brain, it's like constant candy for the brain. And then you have these kids who are playing longer and longer and longer to keep those feelings going.
Of course. So they're chasing it. It's like an addict chasing that original high on
some
level.
It is.
I'm speaking with Jay Watson. She's executive producer, creator, and host of the new GPB show, Your Fantastic Mind. It's premiering tonight. But these stories, you know, brain research inherently, you know, what's going on inside of a person's head is what you're trying to get at. Mm-hmm. And you said you're the outsider, you know, swirling around in this group of scientists. So how do you make this deep research accessible, interesting, and spoken in English for viewers?
Right. So I have lost track of how many times I have said, could you say that again so I understand it? At first, I was embarrassed when I was there because I felt like I really needed to work hard to learn the vernacular. But the very, very important thing for me to remember is that I'm the translator for people at home watching this. And what I have come to believe is that all of this is incredibly accessible, important information for all of us, and I'm the person responsible for putting it into layman's terms. Mm-hmm. I have change the way I do things personally based on what I've learned at Brain Health. I have also subsequently probably diagnosed myself 30 times with, oh, I have symptoms of that. I would have been the world's worst med student. I would have been the med student that had every disease we learned about. But, you know, as a 49-year-old working mother of two kids, I forget things all the time. And then when you work at Emory Brain Health and you can start to think, well, is my forgetfulness normal? Is it? That's just the paranoid part of me. But yes, I think it's been a lot of fun taking all of the fascinating things I've learned and having them be consumable information that people can actually use in their lives.
Well, something that a lot of people can relate to is their own little addictions. And you investigated a nerve in the brain that sends hunger signals. and how freezing that gene can actually help people control their hunger impulses. So what are we discovering about that brain's connection to craving and to gaining or losing weight?
I'm telling you, this story is going to be one of the biggest ones of the season. It's going to air in a little bit later in the season. So basically, an interventional radiologist named Dr. David Prologo. Interventional radiology is you know, when you have someone in a scanner and you are able to use a guided device to treat them. He discovered that he wanted to try, and he got approval for a pilot study from the FDA to freeze a bit of the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve connects the brain to the stomach, and it sends signals back and forth. The brain says to the stomach, I'm hungry, feed me. The stomach feels empty. It sends signals up to the brain. So he froze a tiny bit of this nerve in people, a 30-minute procedure that people walked out with a Band-Aid over the area, which he went through the back, which is around the bra strap level. They walked out. One woman told me afterwards she thought she was a placebo and that nothing was actually done.
Mm-hmm.
Takes a year for that nerve to regenerate. It generates at like a millimeter a day. He does not freeze the entire nerve. It's merely a tiny section. But what it does, it allows people to experience what it feels like not to be hungry long enough for them to lose enough weight to get through that difficult period. As Dr. Prologo was saying, it's not what diet you're on. It doesn't really matter. It's staying on the diet. Mm. And so this allows people to stay on the diet. And the people we talked to all said the same thing, that they went from constantly thinking about food in the next meal to not really. And so it is not available yet, but will be in the future.
Could be a total game changer.
Well, yeah, but what Dr. Prologo and I also talked about is about people misusing it in a world where, look at Hollywood, where everyone's trying to stay size zero. What a convenient way. What a convenient, invisible way to just not feel hungry. So this is intended for people who are overweight and to be able to get them healthy.
Ryujae, some of those that you follow go into very deeply personal moments like degenerative brain disorders and surgeries. How do you approach matters like that as a journalist?
I have always been in relationship with the people that I cover when it comes to medical stories, because I think if you're asking someone to grant you access to the deepest, most painful parts of their lives, that you can't just show up for that day and that interview and then check out. So as a consequence, I would say that most people I do stories on, we remain connected after the story. I think it's important for them to know that they can trust me and that I'm not there to do anything other than to explore what they're going through in a respectful way and to communicate what they're going through to a broader audience. So the people from season one that I've done stories on, you know, a lot of them are my Facebook friends now, and we're in constant contact, and I stay in touch with them. And like I said, because I have the luxury of following these people for a long time, I have one story that my last shoot is going to be next week, and I've been covering this woman for almost a year, and it's epilepsy surgery, and it is extraordinary. But you're deep in someone's life, and you're at the scariest moments.
Well, that it's going to be fascinating to watch, and thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks, Virginia.
Jay Watson, she's from GPB's new series, Your Fantastic Mind, and you can find more about the show at gpb.org/mind. Up next, we're going to hear about how the recession has hit older workers in the state. I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is On Second Thought.